We wouldn't be able to keep this archive going without your support. Donate online today at wyxr.org.
Check, check. Hey, everybody. All right, awesome. Welcome to our final stereo session of the season. Thank you all so much for coming. I'm Kate Teague. I'm the development manager at WIXR. We're thrilled to have you all here. We're thrilled to have had a really successful stereo session season. I want to take a few moments just to thank our sponsors and everyone who has made this series possible. First, to thank our founding partners at WIXR, the Daily Memphian, the Crosstown Concourse, and the University of Memphis. Thank you all so much. Yes, please give them a big round of applause. I also want to thank all of our sponsors. As you all know, this is a free event, so all of our sponsors have helped make this series possible. So I want to give a big shout out to our presenting sponsor, Mempho Presents. Thank you all so much. Also, our season sponsors, we have, of course, the Memphis Listening Lab. Thank you so much for letting us host.
Yay. Thanks, Jim.
These wonderful events. Also, Crosstown Brewing Company, you probably know that as a member, you get a beer, and they do a lot for us throughout the year. So thank you, Crosstown Brewing Company. Thank you, Via Productions. Some of these stereo sessions are actually being recorded. They're all being recorded audio, but the video, some of these will actually have videos of stereo sessions. So thank you so much, Via Productions, for all of your help with that. And who am I missing? I think we have...
Stax Museum.
Well, Stax Museum has sponsored the event tonight. Thank you so much, Stax. Yeah. We love partnering with y'all. This is a perfect event. So thank you so much. And Robbie?
I think that's all of our, and a huge thanks to Brian Dixon as well. Let's please give Brian Dixon a big round of applause. He did all of our poster design for the last two stereo sessions.
I got a few other thank yous.
Okay, cool. And she's got a couple other.
Okay, just a few others. Thanks to all of our volunteers for making this possible. Obviously, you guys are always working with volunteers to come sign in. They do a great job. Of course, Ruth Grant, our just wonderful volunteer who's always doing our merch. Thank you so much. And also a big shout out to Liv Cohen, who is now organizing all of these events, and she does a fantastic job. So thank you, Liv.
And without further ado, I'm really excited about this record. It's incredible. And I'm surprised, like Jim Cole said, he hadn't heard this record. So I'm excited for, you know, people that haven't heard it to hear it tonight. I'm going to introduce program manager of WIXR, Jared J.B. Boyd, to come up and get us started. Thanks, y'all. Oh, you're going to take that mic. That's your seat. All right.
That's what I said. My mic, my seat. How's everybody doing? Robbie, let me see your socks, man. Let me check them socks out. Man, Robbie and Kate got on mint-colored socks. I didn't get that memo. When you're the one that write the newsletter, then you don't get the memo. How's everybody doing? Last stereo session of the season. Everybody feeling all right? I asked that question another way 2 seconds ago. Where's Peter Warren? Why? Get a seat up here, man. I know you like to sit up close. Come on up here. All right, now he's shy. Okay, stereo sessions is, as if you've never been to stereo sessions before, an opportunity for us to explore the different sides of Memphis music that, you know, tourism board ain't gonna tell you about, that you ain't gonna read in the brochure, that you won't see at the Rock and Soul Museum, that you, all those are incredible institutions, friends of mine. I do some incredible things with those people, but we gotta reach out. We gotta, you know, spread our tentacles in some different directions. And the fun thing about these, now we've done two seasons of stereo sessions, is that on both seasons, we've started with something that's kind of prog rocky, and we've ended with something that was related to Stax, and you know, not a straight ahead Memphis soul record, but a record that sort of blends Memphis soul with something a little different. And I'm excited that we are here today, tonight rather, to celebrate a woman, and I'm going to make another point because earlier in the season we talked a bit about how it was a little difficult for us to find the records that showcase what women have done in rock and soul and funk and blues and all of the genres that mean the most to Memphians. And Betty Crusher is someone who's really difficult for me to look at. I maybe have not shared this with many people, but during the pandemic, I called Betty Crusher because I love this record so much. And I called Betty Crusher and I said, "Miss Crusher, I want to know your story." And she told me something that nobody has told me of all the people who are involved with Memphis music through the years has told me. When I reach out, I usually say, "Hey, I'm a young man. I'm a young man that wants to know your story. I want to continue your legacy. You know, I'm from Memphis, and I know the neighborhoods you come from, and I live and I breathe this culture, and I want to know your story." And Ms. Crutcher is the first and only person that told me, "Baby, I'm tired of talking about it." So I never interviewed Ms. Crutcher. Damn. you know, this happened just feet away from here. I was standing right outside these double doors over here. I remember it like yesterday because I knew I had that interview in the bag. I was like, "Ms. Crutcher, I want to talk to you." She did not want to talk. She was tired of it. And she said, "You know, I've been called for books and documentaries and this and that. And baby, I'm tired of talking about it. I'm sure you're a fine young man, but I'm at peace, and I'm tired of talking about it. There's nothing else left to say about my legacy." When we did Stereo Sessions, that moment, the first season of Stereo Sessions, that moment stood with me, it stuck with me. And I said, "Ms. Crutcher's just not ready to talk right now." And it was the pandemic, and I knew that she lived in Nashville, and it'd take a lot to get her here, and that she was aging. What I didn't account for is that Ms. Crutcher passed away. And Ms. Crutcher isn't with us anymore, and you know, the luxury of time with not just Ms. Crutcher, but with so many of these artists who deserve the opportunity to tell their story in a responsible and in a meaningful and a dignified way, we don't have the luxury of time. And this is the only person, Howard Grimes, who's not with us, to be able to talk about the High Rhythm Section record last season. You know, so many of these people, if you don't catch them when you catch them, you may not get an opportunity to catch them again. So I want to honor with real sincerity the words that she told me. She was tired of talking about it. I don't know the pain that might be wrapped up in that statement. I don't know the reality of Ms. Crutcher's condition. I'm not the only person that I know who wanted to honor Ms. Crutcher over the last several years, where she felt like, "I just don't want to look closely at my time as a contributor to this music heritage." Tanya Dyson, host of Welcome to Neo Soulsville, made a beautiful kimono with Ms. Crutcher's face on the back of it. She made one for Ms. Crutcher. She made one for Carla Thomas. She made one for Ann Peebles. And all the other people I've named received their kimonos over time. Ms. Crutcher's kimono still belongs to Tanya Dyson. She wears it out here and there. But although she's not here to be with us, I want all of y'all to celebrate this record as if she is. I want all of y'all to truly understand that here's a woman who was one of the very few women staff songwriters at Stax Records to be a woman in among those ranks, but also a recording artist. She's one of the very few staff songwriters at Stax to be able to make an LP that we're about to hear tonight. But she also is responsible for the first ever platinum selling record, period. It was a brand new certification that wasn't an idea yet. And so gold was a thing for a long time, but when platinum became a thing, Ms. Crutcher co-wrote a song called Who's Making Love by Johnny Taylor. It came out in 1968. It just happened to be one of the first, or if not the very first record to receive a platinum certification by the RIAA. And also consider that Charles Lloyd, Memphian, was the first jazz artist to receive the same certification. So this is something that's important. But Devin Crutcher is on his way. He's Ms. Crutcher's grandson, who she dearly loves. He so happens to be the lead singer for the Barqués now. And he's going to tell us a bit about his grandmother and the lessons that she imparted onto him. Since she cannot be here with us, I want to honor her. I want to think of her. And I want to honor all of my ancestors who have contributed to this tradition, this heritage. But in the meantime, I want to shout out one of my homegirls and drinking partners. And I'm very nervous to get her up here, because if we talk like how we talk when we kicking it, it's going to be a long night. Miss Kia Johnson, American Idol veteran. Come on now. A lady of the Stax heritage who is also a scholar of Ms. Crutcher's work, because you, as I understand it, are a woman who stands and steps and walks in this legacy of 926 East Macklemore. Can you introduce yourself to these people and just tell them why you were curious enough to be here tonight to talk about this record, and also your leadership over these young people that, you know, young men, young women who are poised enough to continue to walk in this legacy.
Well, good evening. I don't think I can introduce myself better than you introduced me, so this is a very tall task, but I will try and attempt to do so. My name is Kia Johnson, lover of Memphis and Midtown Memphis specifically. I do work with another show here too, so we love the Crosstown, love Memphis Listening Lab. I'm an artist, performer, singer, writer, teacher in the Memphis community, specifically through Stax and some other schools in the city. And the reason that I came tonight is, being a woman in the city and in the industry, there weren't a lot of women you could look to find out how did they navigate this space. How did they navigate wanting to give back and wanting to be an artist and want to be relevant? How did they navigate that space? And Betty Crutcher is one of the first names that's going to come up. Teaching young people, and especially young girls, I wanted to be able to give that legacy back too. Finding her music and finding her stories about how she got a chance to sit at the table with men who were writing. She was working there. She wasn't a writer. She wasn't hired right out the bat as a writer. I don't know if people know that, but she cooked for them. And so food started to be a way, which we still do today. We break bread. We get to know each other through food and meals. And then she got a chance to have a seat at the table, and that was the best thing they could have received from her, her gift in that way. So she's special. She's powerful. The music is amazing. Stax music means so much to me, and being able to work with young people who also write and just keeping that legacy of Memphis alive. We're not just the past, but we are definitely on the shoulders of our past for sure.
Well, you know, I want to, you know, before we jump into the record, make note of the fact that, you know, Betty Crutcher is by no means the only woman associated with Stax Records. I mean, Carla Thomas has one of the very first, she and her father have one of the very first hit records on Satellite Records, and then what becomes later Stax. But in service to this particular series, when you talk about LPs, and listen, I love Carla Thomas. She and I have had some amazing times. I can't share all of the stories right here, right now. But, you know, here's a company that for most of the 1960s, actually until 1969, I can very definitively say, not concerned with making albums in the sense of, you know, sitting down and listening to an LP. Hot Buttered Soul is one of those first records in all of R&B music and all of black music that is thought of as something you would want to sit down and listen to for the purpose of listening to an album, an LP. in the same sense of like a psychedelic rock, or you know, in prog rock, or what, you know, these developing genres where in which albums are an important format, LPs are an important format. Prior, the Mid-South is run by jukeboxes, by radio, by singles. And interestingly enough, it seems like our music industry today in the digital realm is again a very single heavy marketplace. So it's interesting that things come back around. So a lot of the artists of the 1960s, the Mabel Johns, an incredible artist on Stax Records, one of the few, one of only two artists that were associated with both Motown and Stax, a singles artist. You know, Carla Thomas, mostly a singles artist, and even the men, Sam and Dave, singles artists. You acquire or accrue enough singles to be able to kind of cobble an album together. But I think this Betty Crutcher record is best heard as an LP. I can't even pick out the single in it. So there weren't many Stax artists of the 1960s, definitely, that are associated with a long playing format. But the interesting thing about this Betty Crutcher LP is that it was so good that they kind of did it twice. If you are familiar with the song Woman to Woman, that came out in 1974, right before Stax's closing in 75, it had one big hit, Woman to Woman, the title track. But the rest of the LP is basically Shirley Brown singing songs from this record. So they tried it twice. They gave it a go twice. Largely, a lot of these songs are co-written with Mac Rice. But Betty Crutcher was associated early in her career with Homer Banks and... I'm losing the other name. We Three. It was a group of three artists, and they worked together to craft the song Who's Making Love by Johnny Taylor, and we talked about that earlier. But, you know, she evolves from being a staff songwriter and, as you mentioned, making spaghetti and other things for these men to be able to get them to warm up to her and create this music. You know, you're familiar with the curriculum of the Stax Music Academy, and all of y'all, I'm sure, are familiar by now with that. We just took a trip to New York City to be with the Stax Music Academy and the Lincoln Center. You know, what do young women particularly, but also all these students, learn about these songwriters, about these records, that they are able to, you know, give the world a sort of a new age interpretation of this music? Because see, I'm already getting old. I can't keep up with them now. So what do you see as someone who has been an instructor in that environment?
That's a wonderful question. I think the thing that's in the water of Memphis is just innovation and soul. So they already come with that. But then when you come to Stax Music Academy, now you can get the history of where that thing comes from. They can see stories of people that look like them from their neighborhoods, and be able to see themselves in the future. Like, I can be an artist. I can contribute something that's uniquely us, but also current. There's just so much talent in Memphis. What can you say? It's exciting to see being able to teach them that there's this whole world that maybe you didn't know about, because everyone knows about Motown and those things, but Stax is right here and it's been here all along. Sometimes Memphis gets that shadow of what happened with Dr. King, and we forget about all the beautiful music, though, that was going on as well. So we get to give them that social justice piece, but also music and the complications and beauty of soul and gospel. That's what Stax Music Academy, I believe, gives them.
What about Kia Johnson? What is your particular ownership of this style of music, of this legacy? And I know y'all just meeting Kia, but I can guarantee you this may be one of the last times you see her, because you're about to really launch out on your own journey and move away from Memphis. Y'all, tell her don't move, y'all. Tell her don't move. Tell them where you're going. She gotta go, y'all.
No, I got accepted into a master's program, Masters of Arts of Musical Theater in London. So I'm moving.
Now I'm really nervous saying it out loud. It's like, what am I doing, JV? Keep me here.
Yeah, and tell him what Simon Cowell said about you. Simon Cowell said you were amazing.
But he also said he could see me in like Oklahoma, which is a musical.
And oh, I thought you were talking about the state. I said, I can't see you. If you want to get sucked up in a tornado, just stay here. Yeah.
No.
Yeah. and you were there, and you were there, and you were there.
Oh my goodness, this is hilarious. But yeah, that's where I'm going, just to continue to give a story to Memphis music in a different way. And I'm really excited to do it, and really happy that I get the opportunity to bring a whole lot of soul to London.
Come on, a whole lot of soul. Give her some love before she goes. This is her last public appearance. Y'all, Devin Crutch is in the building. We're going to get into side A of this record. Y'all ready to listen to it? I can't speak to all of soul music because unfortunately my research is limited. I am very much concerned with the music of Memphis, Tennessee. And of course I have records that aren't from Memphis, but as Stax is concerned, and I appreciate you asking this question. Emily Trenholm, everybody, host of Memphis Metropolis. Emily asked if I could explain sort of the breakdown between 60s and 70s. So if I can speak directly to Stax, and there's tons of other things going on. There's Sly and the Family Stone. There's Marvin Gaye. There's Smokey and the Miracles, and Smokey Robinson is his name. Sorry. Smokey North will be coming in my mind. You saw North in North was gonna jump at Smokey Robinson in the mirror. There's all sorts of other things going on. But in Memphis, with Stax, so in the early 1960s, Jim Stewart starts Stax Satellite Records. And he's a fiddle player around town. And if you can imagine, this might be a time period where Tennessee is still Tennessee. We don't have this Memphis Nashville thing going on that is existing today. He's from Memphis, but he decides to go to a rural town, probably 60, 70 miles away, to just have a little shack with a recording studio. A recording service is still a new idea. Sam Phillips he hadn't done what he's done yet, right? So he's trying to record honky tonk type records because that's what matters to him, because he's a fiddle player and from the honky tonk tradition. And these people, if you can imagine, in rural 1960s Tennessee are like, what in the hell are you trying to do in our neighborhood? You're making the devil's music. It is not cool. We do not like it. There's no industry for this. Please get out of town. Go back to Memphis, where all those dark people are making incredible music. They didn't know it was incredible. I know it's incredible, but they didn't know it was incredible. So he goes back and he's like, all right, let me regroup. He finds an abandoned theater, which there are a lot of because there aren't as many vaudeville and early film theaters thriving. So he's like, all right, South Memphis, here's a theater. Let's make it a recording studio. Maybe my sister can buy into it. And so they restructure the thing. They do it and they make it Satellite Records, and she holds the record shop, and then it becomes Stax, and boom, boom, boom. And then all the people in the neighborhood are like, hey, you know, just like how, you know, I run WYXR downstairs, and they're like, hey, I want a radio show. They're like, hey, I'm living around the corner and I bag groceries. My name's David Porter. Can I come and write songs for you? And they're like, what? So that kind of thing. I'm trying to make it a short story. Also, if you haven't noticed already, if you are a member of WYXR, you can have a beer outside. I'm a super member. But anyway, music is made there. And by 1968, 69, in between 68 and 69, three things that are very important happen. Atlantic Records is no longer interested in distributing Stax's music. And so they have to figure out, hey, we need a distributor because we don't have a. We've already been doing Carla Thomas and William Bell and Rufus Thomas, and we've been sending these records across the world. We do not have the level of distribution sending these records across the world. What are we going to do? Atlantic Records is in New York, and they believe in us, and they don't believe in us anymore. What are we going to do? So that's the first thing. Second thing is that Otis Redding is their brand new star. He's from Georgia. And he came as the roadie / driver for some other guy who flamed out. They didn't even really like his session. And Otis Redding stuck around and said, hey, can I sing a song? And like, no, you're the driver, dude. And they said, all right, whatever. He just starts singing. It's kind of like American Idol. And he just starts singing, like, whoa, you're good. So they make him a star. He becomes a star. He influences the entire world. Europe loves him. San Francisco, all the people that are high out there, they love him. Janis Joplin, she loves him. So Memphis gets this huge star. Well, he decides, I don't want the house band that's already there because we got to travel around. Y'all are cutting too many records. Booker T. Jones, he's a star on his own. We need some young people to play with me when I travel. Well, all those people get on a plane and they die, except for two of them. One dude draws a short straw. He can't take the plane with him. He doesn't get on the plane. And then one other person survives the plane crash to tell the story. So James Alexander of the Barclays survived. He found another mode of transportation to their gig. And he lives and he has a son. He's an amazing hip hop producer. He's made so many amazing hip hop records. But he lives to tell the story. Otis Redding has passed on. So that's the second thing that's happened. It's like our big star has died. He was the huge person who influenced the entire world to love Memphis music. He's passed away. The third thing that happens between 1968 and 69 is that Dr. King dies. He's assassinated at the Lorraine Motel, which if y'all are from Memphis, I hope, raise your hand if you're from Memphis, Tennessee. Woo, amazing place. I live here too. The Peabody Hotel is not integrated. So the best hotel that people can go to in downtown Memphis if they're a rich, famous black person is Lorraine Motel. And Stax doesn't have a proper boardroom, so they write songs and hang out and see their mistresses and write songs and swim in the pool and eat amazing food at the Lorraine Motel. That's their turf. Dr. King is assassinated on their turf. So these three monumental things happen right here in South Memphis. So Stax decides, we gotta start over. 1967, 1968, 1969 sucks. Isaac Hayes makes an album called Hot Buttered Soul. They put out 29 albums in 69. Hot Buttered Soul is the only hit record out of all the 29 records. It's called The Soul Explosion. Boom! To answer your question, this is gonna be the last little bit before we get back into this. Al Bell says that they knew that it was a hit record because in Detroit, Michigan, they got a call from a department store in Detroit, Michigan. They said that someone broke into our department store last night. It was terrible. They took so many things. They broke in and they took all our Hot Buttered Soul albums. They didn't take anything else. They broke in. They didn't steal any money, no clothes, no, just Hot Buttered Soul albums. Said, shit, we got a hit. And so Stax is reborn into the 70s. But we'll talk about that at the next Stereo Sessions. Tonight we talking about Betty Crusher. How y'all doing? Y'all good? Y'all all right? Thanks for that question. You're the man. We got Devin Crusher in the building. How you feeling? Devin Crusher in the building. I'm still doing good on time? All right, well, why don't you come up here? Did that answer your question?
How you guys doing? You guys cool. Doing all right?
We'll talk about Detroit and Philadelphia and D.C. next time, but Memphis got now. How'd you feel listening to that first side of the record?
Emotional, very emotional. She just passed less than a year. So hearing her voice, because honestly, man, I've been avoiding the album because every time I hear it, I see her, and it brings back memories. You know what I'm saying? So even when I was right there, I was getting a little misty. But I'm happy to see each and every one of you guys here supporting my grandmother, man. It means a lot to me. And I know if she was here, she'll be very appreciative to you guys also. And to you, brother.
For my man. Up. Listen, I always see you in the strangest, most random places. Walking in the park or...
Really?
Yeah.
We just randomly run into each other a whole lot.
On summer, digging for records, and then it's like, all right, yeah, we got to make this thing happen for your grandmother. You know, tell me, because I remember a moment when I was in second grade, my mother sent me to school, and she's like, I signed your permission slip, you're going to the Rock and Soul Museum, your cousin is Andrew Love, you need to pay attention and learn something about your family. Yeah. And so I learned something about my family today, and that something has carried me from 7 to 27 to on and on and on. When was the moment that you realized your grandmother wasn't just I don't know if you called her Gigi, Granny, Mimi, or whatever, but Grandma, she was Betty Crusher.
That's what I called her, Grandma Betty. The crazy part about you guys, she never told me she was who she was. Like, I never knew until I had started saying I want to become a singer. I'm like, Grandma, I want to start singing. She's like, oh, that's cute. Like, for real. It was like, oh, that's cute. That's nice. And she in the kitchen cooking. And I'm like, okay, grandma. She's like, well, I ran into an older guy. If you guys don't know, I'm a part of the Barkays, the group, the Barkays. So I'm a part of them now. And it's a member. His name is Angelo Earl. I had saw him at a restaurant or something. And he was like, what's your last name? I said, it's Crutcher. You can't have been to Crutcher. I'm like, yeah, that's my grandmother. Man, you know who your grandmother is? I'm like, my grandmama? That's, oh man, she wrote Teenage Love Affair and Who's Making Love? I'm like, oh, okay. Hey, grandma, is this older guy just told me that you wrote songs and did. He's like, well, baby, yeah, I did some things. I'm like, wow. So that next summer, I think at that time I was maybe in my 20s. That next summer I went to her house and I went to the closet. And, well, as a kid, she always had 1,000 albums. Like, how you get so many albums? Like, it's, imagine this in an apartment. So I was like, Grammy, you have so many albums. So she was like, well, I used to work at this place. And it was called Stacks. And they gave me a lot of stuff. So then I started going through pictures. I'm like, Grandma, you knew John Lennon? She's like, yeah, I met him a couple times. You knew Michael Jackson? Yeah, me and him hung out. I'm like, wow. So that's when I really realized she was who she was. So it wasn't like as a kid she was, you know, I'm Betty Crutcher. I wrote songs for Johnny Taylor. I did this and that. No, she was really humble about it until someone asked her. Then she'll say, yeah, I did some songs. I did this. And also, by the way, my godfather is Jim Stewart. Never knew who the freak this guy was until later on. And I'm like, oh, you was the owner of Stax? So it was weird, bro. That's weird.
Yeah, this is weird. So let's talk about your music and your journey, because there's clearly something in you deep that was not explored at an early age. I mean, how did you grow up in music, considering your grandmother didn't say right out, listen, listen, I can look around. There's only so many black folk in there. Every black cookout ends with one argument. Johnny Taylor or Tyrone Davis. Johnny Taylor wouldn't be Johnny Taylor without Who's Making Love in 1968. How did you find out that your birthright is Johnny Taylor? You are a part of I haven't seen Game of Thrones, but you in the black Game of Thrones some kind of way.
You are silly.
We here. We gonna. Black, this is the last Theory Session. We got to talk about
Let's
it.
Let's have some fun, brother. Let's have some fun. Okay. I don't know. That's.
How did you start singing? Let's just leave your grandmother out of it.
Okay, how I actually started singing, she has a son. His name is DeWano Crutcher. And he could really, really sing, but he never wanted to be a star. So when he was singing, I was like, I want to try and sing too. So I started kind of mocking him, trying to sing like him. And then I did some talent shows and stuff like that started to happen. Then I did a show called Making a Band, which was Diddy. So I did that, and after that is when stuff started to kind of roll. And then after, I'm like, I want to be a singer. She was always telling me, I would rather you be a songwriter than a singer. Like, focus on songwriting, because the real money is in songwriting. Let me tell you, she hasn't worked since 60. 68, that whole time, she lived off her royalties and everything. So she always told me that writing was the way. But I'm like, Grandma, I want to be a star. I want to be the guy in front. Like, you guys, let me tell you something. I can sing in front of thousands of people. Talking in front of you guys, this is hard.
I see you shaking. I'm like, hold on now.
I'm a little nervous, but so that's how I actually started singing, was just mocking him, and then everything to start to flow, man. Then now I've been around the world. Like, I've seen almost every continent.
And you're just getting back from tour, right?
Yeah.
How does the grandson of Betty Crutcher end up with the Barkays, legendary group of the Stax legacy? I mean, one of the seminal, you know, not necessarily always spoken of when we talk about the house bands and Marquees and Booker T and the MGs. The Barkays are right there, but they've gone beyond that. I mean, that the the proof is in the pudding. You're right here. You are a part of this group. You know, I remember sitting in the living room with my dad, and I saw this. I went to Best Buy. I said, "Dad, I want that movie, Superbad. I want that movie right there." He's like, "This is some stupid ass shit." And we popped it in, and as soon as we hit it, boom, the barcades. Boom, the barcades. Boom. And my dad said, "What is this stupid Animal House ass bullshit with all this Memphis music in it? You are a part of that group.
You that crazy as hell." That's all I was like, my guy.
But seriously, though. Okay. Seriously.
Yeah.
How?
James Alexander. All my life, like, she never told me who these people were, but I've always knew them. Like, I knew Little Milton. I knew Rance Allen. I knew all those guys, but I never knew they were who they were until I got older. And I'm like, okay, but Grandma, who are you? Like, how do you know all these people? Until they started to explain to me who she was. But as far as me with the Barcades, James Alexander, he saw me out. Well, I've been knowing him pretty much majority of my life, but then I was doing a show singing. He was like, "Hey, I got an open spot. I would love for you to kind of fill in for me." And then I did it, and I've been with them for almost 3 years now. Yeah, so thank you. Thank you guys so much.
And where did y'all just travel just recently?
We just did Seattle. Mm-hmm. We got back Saturday.
But y'all did a little run, right?
Yeah. Seattle, we did San Francisco, Stockton, California, Fresno, Indianapolis, and Chicago.
Well, you know, before you walked in, I shared what I've shared with you before, is that I gave your grandmother a call, and I told her, you know, I want to be able to write your story. And she said, "Baby, I'm tired of talking about it." And you, when I told you that, you said, "That sound like her." Speak to me a bit about her personality, about any of the things that she shared with you regarding that time, that she was really the foremost woman staff writer at Stax. And, you know, I've got a little bit of piece here right here that may give some context to why a lot of people don't know that she even did an LP as the front person, as the artist. But tell me about what she's told you about her experience as a professional at Stax's warehouse of music. I mean, it was a factory of music.
True. From the stories she has told me, that during that time, as you know, it was the early 60s to 70s, to where it was hard for women to get established in that game. So she told me she had such a hard time to get her songs placed. Like, she even had to give part of her songs away just so they can be put on somebody's album. So it's more songs that she actually wrote that she don't get full credit for. But she said, "I just wanted to be inside the door." So she had to give a little bit. So honestly, the album, she never wanted to be a real singer. She only wanted to be a writer. But at that time is when Stax was about to close, and Jim Stewart, he needed every man on deck. Well, Albert Bell, he needed every person on deck to put out an album. I don't care who you are. If you can sing, rap, I mean, tell poetry, whatever you can do, I need you to make an album. So she just so happened made that album. Never wanted to. She never, like, even in the house, she would never sing, talk about the album or nothing. I didn't know the album was even in existence until later on. So, but Jim Stewart actually told me he wished that he put money behind the album, because he said the album was so good that he hated that when it came out, the label was going down. So he really couldn't do anything about it. But he said that was one of his favorite albums. So it's just, she was saying that it was extremely hard for her, but she persevered through it and still was able to make things happen.
One of my favorite albums as well. Y'all heard Side A. What do y'all think about that record? Y'all like a record yet? There's an interesting chapter in David Less's book, Memphis Mayhem, about how the Memphis soul sound influenced the British invasion, and how the British invasion then influenced the Memphis soul sound. But this is written in their soul, the Stax songwriter demos, of which Betty Crutcher is, I feel, one of the most important characters of this story. And then, you know, it's interesting. It's weird to think of an anthology of music as having characters. But Betty Crutcher is the lead woman in this group. And if I can read this excerpt. Her album is co-written with a man named Sir Mac Rice, who was a member of the famous Falcons, which is a down south Alabama group that included Eddie Floyd and Wilson Pickett. So Mac Rice, Wilson Pickett, Eddie Floyd, all members of the famous Falcons, at different points in their career were involved at Stax. If I can read this excerpt, it begins, Mac Rice did a lot of co-writing at Stax, but his relationship with Betty Crutcher was special. Quote, "We used to talk every morning about an hour on the phone, talk spiritually," said Smack. "She's a very spiritual person. She's more religioned than anybody I saw at Stax besides Al Bell." Mac began admiring her work when she did Who's Making Love. He says, "I could tell the way her song was written that she was one of the best that I'd ever seen. We became very good friends, and we wrote an album for her, produced it together. Long As You Love Me was released in 1974 when Stax's distribution was suffering. And the record didn't draw attention until Crate Diggers began sampling from it. The reissue features a couple demos that were not included on this collection. So go buy that next after you buy this." This is a $70 collection. I hate that I had to purchase it, but it's okay. I'll make it up next time. "I was receiving a BMI award at a dinner in New York," says Betty Crutcher, "and John Lennon was receiving an award at the same time. I was amazed because I wanted to meet him so much, but I found out that he wanted to meet me. One of the Beatles knew about my catalog. I was so excited. I bet I was 10 feet tall when I left that presentation, because just the idea of a Beatle knowing about me. And he said that he followed the music that was coming out of Memphis and out of Stax Records for a long time. I was just amazed. That was a very important night for me, because I was just this one little female down here at Stax Records with all these guys who didn't go out of their way to make me feel like I was a star writer or anything. And here's one of the Beatles who recognized my work and was glad to meet me. Oh man, he wanted to take pictures together. That photograph said to me that somebody was listening to what I wrote, and not just anybody. This was John Lennon." Here's a picture of Miss Crutcher, John Lennon, and Yoko Ono. It's in this collection, just came out from Kraft Records, written in their soul, the songwriting demos of Stax. You want to get in the side two of this record? Miss Betty Crutcher. Devin Crutcher, my man.
Thank you guys so much.
We're going to flip-flop. If you were in that room before, hang out here. If you didn't get to experience that room, check it out in there. Betty Crutcher, Long As They Love Me. Long As I Love You, rather.
Too weak to fight this feeling that's burning.
Crutcher there. She's the one person that stands out to me on the Ridden Our Souls compilation whose demos sound pretty much finished. There's more music that she could have put out, or maybe she would have tried to place on another artist. Also, as I mentioned earlier, on Truth Records, which was a subsidiary of Stax that they tried to kind of hide an extra subsidiary so that when they went bankrupt, they'd have another label. Woman to Woman, which was their last hit, that the entire remainder of that record is basically Shirley Brown re-recording songs from this record. So a lot of the songs like Passion and some of the other records appear on that album the same year, which is interesting. All right, y'all, enjoy the last stereo session of the season. We appreciate all of our sponsors this season, especially our sponsors for this session. And there was a lot of heavy lifting in regards to graphic design that helped to make this a very clear and concise experience throughout 6 months. Thanks to the Memphis Listening Lab for being with us, Via, and all of our other sponsors that continually helped us to make this a special experience. Thanks tonight for Kia for jumping in last minute. I think she just stepped out. Devin has a gig tonight. He's going to be at Viva out east. So if you want to go see some more of him, he is good on stage. I mean, I want to throw my panties at him. He's that good. He's that good. Super good. My panties are dirty, though. Thanks to all my colleagues at WYXR for this experience. Robbie and I were talking a bit about this record. The only other thing that I have to say about it is if you find a copy of it, it's the only Stax record I can think of that has like blemishes perpetually. This tonight's the first night I've seen other records, other copies of this record. Each of them have like the same smudges and just inconsistent printing. And just, I truly believe that this was a rush job to get this record out to market. And she gave so much of herself to this record, even if she didn't feel like she was viable as a star out front. She did an incredible job with this record. Miss Crutcher wrote a lot of hit records, co-wrote a lot of hit records for Stax, but also co-wrote some other records for Malico and other labels in Southern Soul. So if you can find more information about her, please do. There's stuff out there. I've written articles about her, that sort of thing. I can't wait for next session. It's my first time saying this. I'm no Tom Hanks or anything, but I'm going to go ahead and try to look into the future. I'm sleepless in Seattle. It's a beautiful day in my neighborhood. I love the thing you do. I think that, you know, there are a lot of WYXR DJs that have records that they love. And so potentially, maybe, hopefully, who knows, I might take a step back and allow some of our WYXR DJs to talk about some of the records that they love. Don't know. We'll have to wait till next year to see. I think so, too. I might get some rest out of it. Who knows? but I really appreciate sincerely all of you for being here to celebrate some of the records that I love from my collection. To let you in behind the scenes a bit, you know, we book these based not just on the records that I love, but people who we think we can get to come and talk about them. So if there are artists that you feel like are in this community that haven't been appreciated, that have done incredible records, that you would want to sit next to someone and listen to them, holler at me. I ain't hard to find. I'm just right here on this hall or downstairs. Yeah, come to the pull up. It's coming up. Come to TKDC for our DJ night. Come to all of our events, because we really, really appreciate your feedback. That's one thing that we really love. All our DJs are volunteers. This station is a community station. It's a nonprofit station. And we want to know that you're listening. We want to know that you care about it. And so it's not just me or Robbie or Kate or Liv or Shelby. It's almost 100 other people in this effort that really need to know that you are appreciating the thing that we do, and it's going to grow. The New York experience
showed me that. I mean, there's so much an appetite for what we do here in this city. Trust me, people were damn near to the point of annoying me of how much they cared about what we're doing in this city. And every place we turned that we shared that we are from Memphis, people were like, so, hey, y'all are a part of that experience. I appreciate you. Thanks again, Jim.